Welcome to the Resound Worship Songwriting Podcast, episode 132. And this is an interview special where I'm delighted to be joined by Integrity Music's Steve Harding. Steve, welcome to the pod.
Hello. Good to be here. How you doing, Joel?
I'm all right, thank you. It's a really gorgeous sunny day today, frosty on the ground, lifts my spirits. You're in Brighton, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's pretty good here too. A little grey, but can't complain.
So just tell us, what do you do in life? You certainly, I mean, you work with Integrity, don't you? And just tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so I've been working in A&R, as it's called, for the last 6 years. With Integrity Music, and that stands for artist and repertoire. So artists, we might be familiar with that terminology of helping people, the artistry of people. So how can we create something beautiful? How can we make, how can we help artists create? So we sometimes use that language. Some people feel uncomfortable using that terminology in the church. Other people absolutely love it. And then repertoire is simply songs. So it's working with people, artistry and songs.
Oh, nice. That's what I do. Well, I should change my title.
You are. You should put that on your business card.
I are. Do people A&R. Have them? No, yeah. I don't have a business card anymore. That's cool. Well, I'd like in a bit, we'll dig a little bit more into some of that. But can you just tell us a bit more about Integrity? So I think people will know the name Integrity. Lots of our listeners are people who write songs. They write songs for the local churches and so on, different levels of experience and involvement with the industry, and Integrity is one of those names that we've seen on the copyright credits for things. We know it's been around for a while. You know, what is it as an organization? Can you give us a little bit of the story?
Absolutely. Yes. So Integrity Music is a company and a ministry that grew up in the States. There's been a bit of a potted history because as things work, there's some companies in the UK, so Kingsway, who you may have already heard, and of Kingsway in the 80s and 90s particularly, were very, very active, but went before that, and there were companies and ministries before that, but Integrity it amalgamated a group to really help. It's all been the same mission the whole way through, though, which is to serve the church. In particularly in congregational song, and that's been the effort that I've devoted my life to, and working with Integrity has just been a complete joy. I've been in other places in the industry as a worship pastor, volunteer worship pastor, as a recovering songwriter, at a local church of 100 and something people, and I serve in the on the PA team and in the musicians team. So for me, it all fits together quite nicely. And so I've really enjoyed just helping, getting alongside artists, getting alongside writers, and really digging deep and saying, okay, how can we serve the church? What is song for? How do songs work? What kind of songs does the church need? Are there any gaps? Which I know you and I have had some conversation over that, and Resound does some wonderful work in identifying that and serving the church there.
So where does your story begin in terms of you getting involved in Christian music?
My first foray was as an early teenager, I'd done some grades, and we were just chatting before the podcast. I got some grades, but I think the pass mark was 100, and I got 101.
Nice.
on most of the grades that I got. So there's a real spirit of excellence about that.
Yeah.
But I felt that I gave up that route, and just ended up noodling around at the piano. Really was my happy place. And then one day at church, I got a call saying the keyboard player's sick. Do you want you play piano? Do you want to play in a worship team? And I said yes. And it was predictably not pretty, but there was something about music and faith coming together for me in that time that I've really have I've not forgotten. And as is often the way with teenagers and worship teams, my faith came alive in that Sunday setting in community worship. And then after a few years of that, 2 or 3 years of that, I found my way to the Hillsong Church in Australia and did a year course there. A friend of mine challenged me, just saying, "What do you think God is saying? What are you going to do with your life?" Because I was like, "I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Should I go to university? A lot of people seem to be doing that." And I did a music and leadership course out there that was very, very transformative. I'd say completely different end of the spectrum theologically to me. So I had some really fantastic conversations that year, and I felt really stretched. But it was a good year. So then I came back and joined a completely third different church, which was completely different, and had this wonderful crisis of faith that you have when you have several church experiences.
Yeah.
I moved from a reform setting to a Pentecostal setting to a social action kind of church. And just in retrospect, absolutely wonderful, because you kind of get a vantage point on Jesus that you would not get if you stayed in one lane. So I've definitely benefited from some different church experiences in my work, and have come to appreciate what each of those churches bring to the expression of the wider, the bride of Christ, as the scripture puts it.
And were you writing songs at that time?
I would have written 1.5 songs at that time.
That's very specific.
Yeah, very specific. Actually, no, probably one. The half came later when I was at university. I came to songwriting quite late, and I did it in a non-advisable way, which was slightly later on in my journey. So I'd started working after did university, did a church album, which was great fun, with Survivor Records, which was part of Kingsway, which would then become with Les Moyer, who I think most people know in the industry is a real hero. And I'd gone on and playing, and I'd started to play for some worship leaders, UK worship leaders around the place as a keyboard player, and that was great fun. And then connected with a producer and started working in that side of things as well. So I was playing, recording, and then latterly producing and mixing and mastering. So I kind of done most points along the musical journey, as well as being a volunteer worship pastor for about 15 years at my local church. So I feel like I've had a good understanding of a lot of different type of camps, and some of the needs around that. But in terms of songwriting, I came to that through, I pulled together with my friends Doug Ross and Tom Mills, pulled together a little community. I think it's 15 years ago now. Just about 15 years ago. And we gathered a bunch of songwriters because we thought these people are wonderful. And it seemed at the time that you could, the only way to develop your craft in songwriting was to leave your home church and to join a bigger church and be around some other people. And that's, you know, that's a wonderful thing to do, but it's not possible for some people. Some other folk don't want to do that. They feel very much called to their locality. So we thought, how about we gather a community, the Push community it was called. We couldn't think of a name, so that just sort of stuck. And we just gathered worship leaders who we thought were just invested in local church songwriting, and we'd gather and we'd skill up and we'd do a bit of song critique, all the stuff that you guys do so well. We found that so valuable, and those relationships exist to this day. And so part of, there was two rules for that group, and the first was everyone contributes, everyone brings a contribution, and the second one, which is almost impossible if you're British, is there are no apologies allowed.
Right.
So it typically, you know, you'd be, oh, you know, I've got a cold at the moment, or the second verse isn't finished, or this, that, and the other. We just thought it was a good idea to provide a place of security where people find it comfortable to be, for songs to be incomplete and to be incomplete ourselves. Mm. We're all a work in progress. We're all part of God's melody that he is, that he's writing. So let's just get comfortable being uncomfortable with each other and present our half-formed ideas, and maybe together we might be able to work something out and to make something beautiful out of that. So I started writing in that setting, whereas sitting around with people that I thought, these are great writers, and we've made a rule that everyone contributes. So I started to bring some half-formed ideas, and that was really the start of my songwriting journey.
I wonder, at what point did you begin to see your niche, your kind of, it seems to me you've got a clear calling to walk alongside songwriters, walk alongside church musicians and so on, as well as participating in it yourself. Was that something you always felt called to, or did you kind of find your way into it?
Yeah, I feel like I have, my revelation is rarely Damascus Road. It's often Emmaus Road. So I look back in and think, oh yes, that's almost like there was some kind of purpose or plan. And I have to say, I haven't been, that's not been driven by me necessarily, but I've always leant towards supporting people. So I loved for many years supporting Kathy Burton, being her pianist, and I love helping people come up with their projects and shape the project. And so as a producer, that was such a joy to be able to, when people would come and they'd have a little demo of something, and it'd be maybe a voice note or that kind of thing. So, okay, let's talk about how can we make the best possible. So I've always felt like I've supported, I've been in a supporting role. In terms of my job now, which is sort of fully devoted to serving other folk and fully devoted to helping people come up with, I guess, but I hope it be holistic. So come up with a way of working that doesn't cost you your soul. You know, there's a financial reality for some of the folk that we work with. Some people are work for churches. Some people it's their job. How do you do that and become more human, you know, as opposed to so there's, it's very holistic. It's, yes, it's melody choice. Yes, it's word choice. Yes, it's how do you find the people that to reach the people that will really resonate with these songs. But I've forgotten the question that you asked me. So
that's all right. So the Push community, that ran, like, how many people were involved? How long did that run?
So it was a couple of years in earnest, but I feel like there was tail end both sides. We were sort of working with people about 10 to 12 people, so a kind of relatively small community. And we made a CD, as you did in those days, played a couple of conferences, but it was really, it was a band of worship leaders and worship writers. So it good times, really, really good times.
I mean, I definitely had that experience of, in the 90s, I started working in the church in the 90s and the noughties. We were all a little bit less connected than we are right now in, you know, social media and the rest of it. And that slight feeling of isolation in a church, but also knowing that you're writing songs and they seem to be working and the church wants to sing them, but you kind of feel like, I wish someone would help me. And I've told exactly the story you've described to people at other times where I've said, but unless I was signed up to a label and had therefore could get the, you know, the attention and the ear of some of these experts and so on, I got nobody to help me. And that was one of the things definitely that drove me into trying to find community, but actually that became trying to form community, because it I suppose that's what happens, doesn't it, when you're looking for something.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that it's one of those things where when you see a lack, it's quite often that you are the solution to that lack. So there's lots of people that look for mentors, and you know, you reach an age where you go, I should probably be one then.
Probably be me.
No, that's so true. And the community value, I don't think it matters whether you're you're in a small rural church somewhere, or whether you've had global success in writing, we're all human and we all need community. And I think there's just a basic human need to be connected to others, to be anchored in, to be located somewhere. You know, that's part of the thinking that I is very dear to me, is the sort of being connected to the locality of where we're at. And when I was talking about the push community, it was, what is it like to stay at home and to develop your craft and to develop your gift and to dig in your locality? All of the saints seem to be located, you know, whether it's from Jesus of Nazareth to Francis of Assisi to Teresa of Calcutta or Teresa of Avila. We're all located, and maybe there's an increasing sense of the digital nomad, and we can have some kind of belonging, some genuine belonging online. But there's also a need to be with people and be in the same space, and something about congregational song where we're all singing in our you know, our breath is mingling, which is in the light of COVID is both terrifying and wonderful.
Yeah. And so the move to Integrity, how did that come about? Was that something you were looking for?
Yes. Well, I guess it kind of connects to what you were saying about the Emmaus Road thing, because I went out for breakfast with two friends of mine, so Chris Lawson-Jones and Phil Luce. And being self-employed for 17 years, it was in the end, you never turn down a free breakfast. Yeah. It's just one of the unwritten rules that you never turn down. And so I went for breakfast, and they said, have you ever thought about the A&R role? And that had always been Chris and Les in my mind. And so I thought, I don't think I know what that is. Can you describe to me what that is? And when they described it, I thought, that's what I've been doing for the last sort of 10 years, unofficially, at least 15 years with the push community of how do we... how do you get alongside people, and holistically, how do you work? How do you find collaborative? How do you find partners? How do you link people up? How do you imagine something? I think that's an important word to me. Having an imagination for something is not just a concept. It's we need an imagination for congregational worship, and for we have an imagination of who God is. And, you know, Tozer is very clear on that our picture of God defines our worship to a large degree. So I'm all about building the imagination for worship and for song and for many different ways our liturgy can be expressed.
When you arrived into the role, I'm quite interested, like what did you find? What was the integrity that you arrived at? What was going on? What was it like? And how did you begin to then develop some vision for what could come next?
Yeah. So one of the first things is to say, it's just daunting to me in many ways, because this is Ron Canole and Darlene Check and these people who are just almost globally known within the church. And in fact, one of my early in terms of going to Hillsong, it was my mum got an Integrity tape through the post in those days, and I'd listen to Shout to the Lord and come, well, that sounds really quite, you, this was the 90s, this was very very fresh and a very new kind of way of expressing musical worship. And that had really been the reason that I went out to Australia to Sydney and to study there, was that tape from Integrity. So it was a sense of return home. But when they described the job to me, and that sort of sense of the pastoral, that sense of the creative, and the sense of really the whole musical process of from before the song, writing the song, editing the song, recording the song, mixing, mastering, and then finding people that are going to resonate with it. I felt like, I've got something to say to that. And I feel like I've had some experience in that. So with the combination of being a pastor and the push community and playing with a lot of the worship leaders around the country, I felt like I had something. So that was a really good start. There's a weight to it in terms of the history and the legacy. But I did feel a clear thing from the Lord just saying, you can't be anyone else. you're not very good at that. So what are the contributions that you feel called to, and what is the need now? Because I think the need changes. The sort of experiment in contemporary Christian worship is only a few decades old, and it's kind of crazy to think that, you know, here we go, we've reached the answer.
Yeah.
You know, it's an ever-evolving thing. You know, in studying something of Christian music and chant and how we've sort of developed harmonically and theologically and in all kinds of directions, I think that there's some, God has something for us in the future that is doesn't look quite like what it does now. So for me, one of the things was looking at the diet of the church in terms of song. I think we all know the power of congregational song, and very often it is the songs that are being dwelt on and sung over and remembered in the week, even perhaps more than the preach, the sort of traditional Protestant, that this is the center of what we do with the pulpit, the center of a church building. So there's a weight to that, including having scriptures influence within song, obviously being paramount. But looking at the diet of the church, it seemed that really I looked at the CCLI charts, which you will know of, but if people don't know of that, it's just an indication, a good indication now, of what the local church is singing. And I just noticed that in the UK particularly, there were very, very few songs that we were singing from UK residents, from the soil of this land.
Yeah.
There were very few songs within the last 10 years that the church is singing. And some conversations with some other friends and some guys at the Vineyard, we were talking about why is this? And we found something quite consistent, which was that there was a group of four big organizations or churches that we were singing those songs. And the sense was never, this is a bad thing. It's more, this, what a gift to the church. So Hillsong, Bethel, Passion, Elevation, what a gift to the church these churches, these ministries have been. But if that's the only thing we're singing, I don't think that's what they would want. They're writing songs for their community, and that's wonderful. And then we get to share in some of those. But where are the songs? Where's the validation for locally grown song? And I kind of mean that both on the national level, but also just in our individual churches. What's the value of local song? So really, I was part of a team that was setting up a project called Songs from the Soil, which really is in response to that of how can we give dignity to the local church? How can we give, how can we tell the testimony of the church in this place, in this time? Because I think that is also important. Nutritionists say that if you want to get healthy, you eat at home. And I've always taken that to heart as possibly something for song as well as for diet, which, you know, I'm feeling slightly convicted. We're recording this just after Christmas. And yeah, I suppose we were eating at home. It was just eating a lot at home. So really we've done that in several ways, but the first of which was just, we just wanted to record gather a few writers to write some songs deliberately for the UK church. You know, we were saying, I remember at the recording of this, Nathan Jess, one of the writers, asked me, do you want me to tone down my Irish accent? So he's from Northern Ireland. Like, no, the opposite, you know. So when we're writing, we wanted to be very Irish, be very from Basingstoke, you know. You are located in a place for a reason, and your community is located there. So let's write from that perspective. But that's a unique thing. So that's been a bit of the journey in terms of song, and what we're trying to revalidate. Not that global songs are a bad thing. I really am at pains to, it's a gift, you know, particularly as we're also seeing songs now from Nigeria with Sinach, and Waymaker has really touched, it's been around the world. It's a beautiful thing. I would always want to say it's a fantastic thing, and it's really great to do our own songwriting as well.
For a man in your position, you know, you
do you mean you my age?
Your age? No, I mean your role. You have I'm trying to put this. You sort of have the opportunity to fulfill people's dreams or not. Because, you know, so many people who are songwriters, kind of, I just want to get on a record. I just want a record deal. I want to record stuff. I want to whatever it might be. And there are so many, I mean, you know, we both know this. There are so many talented songwriters out there. Some, you know, exceptionally talented songwriters who we've never heard on a major label or anything else like that. And obviously part of your role is selecting, finding a few people out of that broad body of songwriters who you're going to give some kind of platform to, or you're going to involve it in your work. How do you go about that? What are the thing? I mean, again, this thing, this is something listeners will be interested in, because we all recognize you can't sign everyone. You can't involve everyone. So are there particular rules of thumb? Are there particular things you're looking for? Is it very much instinctive?
Yeah, I think first of all, just to name what you're saying there is, I would sign everybody because if I could, but you cannot. And it's one of the things, I think it's really important is to see people in the light that in a good light. So, I'm thinking for me, like you say, I cannot fulfill people's dreams. I can walk alongside people, and we can go further than they would have gone on their own. That is something I'm pretty confident on. So to me, it's all about the language of partnership. So, in what ways can we partner with people to help them just knock over a few of the barriers that might be in their way? So in terms of what we look for. I guess there's a few different things. One is a diversity of persons. So we're not going to sort of sign. We don't want to work with exactly carbon copies. We want a multifaceted nature to artistry within the church, and it's important. I do feel like it's an important thing because you have to push against. The sameness that can grow up, and so there is a in terms of all different kinds of diversity. It's important to push into that, and just on a musical level, there's one of the criticisms is because the limitations of the genre. I'm one of those people that says no, there are limitations on this genre, and let's be comfortable with that. And in fact, limitations are often a great source of creativity, and let's make friends with that. So I guess finding the right people that we feel like we can partner with. We've got people talk in the commercial realm of the value add. and so we would never want to be partnering with someone that we didn't genuinely believe we could add value to what they're doing. It's the partnership. Of course, there's things that you would imagine for anything. You're looking for character and people that have integrity in their character. And, you know, the name Integrity for me is when I joined the company, I thought, oh, what a terrible name. What a thorn in the side. But it's brilliant as a check, because you're constantly, oh, we're called Integrity. Well, that means that we have to in the way that we deal with people and what partnership looks like, that has to have integrity. And I'm sure there's many mistakes out there, but the aim and the heart is always to treat people well. And I feel in the whole we really do. And what are we looking for? I guess people that are connected to the local church, understand the needs of the local church, are writing pastorally and prophetically into the lexicon, into the hymnody of the church. That's so crucial. Their artistry, there's something compelling about it, something that goes, oh, that's, I haven't heard that, or that's really captivating. There's something of beauty that makes me awake to the presence of God already with us. That's the kind of thing. And so, as you say, it's pretty tangible. Intangible. I think there's absolutely a commercial aspect to it. So sometimes you go, we have to note the commercial thing, even if we go, but we're talking about development here, because we obviously we put the time in, and we want to make sure that we add value so that everything grows. Lots of different things.
Yeah.
It's part instinct, part data is a reality of it.
Is it an organic thing? I mean, are you going out looking? Are you reviewing people sending you tapes? Or is it you just encounter people and people come on your radar? Does anyone send you tapes?
Yes, I have a tape on my desk right now. Well, this was the adventure. So one of the other guys said, I've got a tape player at home, so he's brought that in to the cassette tape. Yeah. So yes, generally it's a small environment, so most people are aware of we're sort of aware because of social media and things like that. Some people there's just relationship for 5 years or more, and there becomes a point where people identify a need that they have, and we go, yes, we can serve that need, or no, we can't serve that need. I'm a dad. I'm not away at different churches every weekend. I travel to places to see people, to encourage, to see what God's doing around the country. Really, that's part of it. But I think people might have a picture of a sort of talent scout type thing.
Yeah.
And that's really not what happens. Speaking from my personal experience, that's not been the approach. But I'm always way before this job, I've always been like, hey, send me the music. I'd love to listen to it.
Yeah.
And I'd love to sort of feedback. And what have you thought about this? And have you connected with this person? And have you read this scripture? Because you're kind of paraphrasing this part of scripture. That kind of thing has been my vocabulary and my vocation since teenage years.
Mm. So talk a bit more about Songs from the Soil, how you brought together artists, songwriters, and got them writing together. And I assume they weren't people who were all used to writing together at the beginning. It was people who had their own, forging their own paths and so on. How did that process go? How did it work?
With these things, I like to present something when it's ready, and I felt the nudge to go ahead with it not being very, not completely ready. So we pushed ahead. We brought some writers together. Some of them knew each other. Some of them had really not been in co-writing situations before, so there was you try to set it up well with some guardrails of like, hey, try and be generous in the room, and some of that sort of stuff. Some of the people, Graham Kendrick was there, who obviously is the godfather,
the daddy.
I think it was called the Archbishop of Songwriting at an event. who we know and love, and so obviously just such a privilege to be around him, and just his devotion to this day of songwriting is really inspirational. The way he edits and continues to work and loves writing with other people, there's a generosity there. Right through to people in their 20s and had not really co-written before, had done writing before, so it was quite a diverse mix of people and age ranges. So that was great fun, and to a degree it was an experiment. We'd done some online writes during COVID, and that had been pretty fruitful, you guys do that, but that was a really new thing. Songwriting over Zoom was we the writing process was good and editing, and it was an experiment, and we did say, well, we're going to try writing, and we're going to record five songs that were already in the church.
Yeah.
And we just wanted to give them a bit of a help because we thought these are fantastic songs. And like you say, there are some brilliant writers and some brilliant songs that just maybe just get lost because perhaps volume. But these were songs that we really felt were saying something important, something pastoral, something prophetic to the church. Here's our little way of helping that. And, you know, it's important to say that generosity is a good value. And I think there's a lot of people around it in the industry that are really generous people. I'm thinking of Chris Lawson-Jones, who runs Wings, and I'm thinking of Jamie Thompson at Song Solutions. You guys are just magnificent as well. The generosity and the way that you engage people is just wonderful, really, really good. But we really wanted to have songs on the project that we had no publishing interest in, which so how do we help support songs that we don't necessarily, they're not our property, if you like, and so how do you model generosity? I think that's been one of the challenges for people over the last 20 years is that I'm writing my songs and I'm singing my songs, but do other people, are we championing each other's songs? And so how do we create an environment in which we can begin to champion each other and each other's songs? So that I think hopefully culturally from the beginning, we're just trying to build in those values of really great, high quality songwriting and generosity and collaboration and a diversity of subjects, which perhaps one of the limitations of when we do get all of our songs from four different sources is the subject range narrows down because the revelation of God to those communities is a particular thing. But where I am and where you are, there are revelations to our churches that the wider church needs to, that we're part of that revelation as well. So I think that having songs from Baptist churches and songs from Pentecostal churches and Anglican churches and mega churches and churches of house churches. I think it's all part of it. And so, and the other goal, I guess, we wanted was these are good quality musicians playing, but there's nothing super fancy going on. These are all replicable.
Yeah, that word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you could just edit the gaps in that.
Yeah.
They're able to be done in any local church. So 82% of churches are 100 or under. And so how do you write churches for that? Because I think sometimes the albums can be produced by big churches and there's these grand visions, which is wonderful for that community, but is very difficult to translate to smaller settings with basic instrumentation.
We did a survey a few years ago. I sent it to you, actually. I don't know if you've seen it, but we surveyed lots of churches, asked them about the music, various things, but including the musical lineup. And the piano is the most common instrument. The guitar, about 2/3 of churches, the ones that we surveyed. And then the next most common instrument was the flute.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a flute player everywhere. Well,
yes.
More than half of the churches have got one. So then you start thinking, as songwriters and as people who present the songs, how can we encourage the flute players?
Yeah.
As well as the electric guitarists or the, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah. That's a very good point. And, you know, good luck to the flute players that want to play the electric line in some of these songs. It's not easy to just translate some of those things. But I think the point is really well made in the sense of it's a peculiarity of congregational songwriting is you're ultimately not writing for yourself. You're writing for a group of people. So I almost think, the most common instrument is the voice. And so, you know, it's sometimes weird because we rehearse this music without the main instrument in the room. And so that to me is like, okay, well, let's try and get that front and center in the sense that the congregation, when we rehearse the band,
the congregation's voice is the main
congregation.
Instrument. Yeah,
absolutely. And that comes at 10 o'clock in our instance. Mm. So I think having that front and center in our minds as we write, if we are writing for our community, then that's such a key thing. I mean, I would also say in the same breath is that we have narrowed the musical contribution to the congregational song. And I do think there is musical value in all kinds of other expressions of worship, even within the musical realm. Mm. So that's sometimes it's easy to I'll just make it a bit, I'll dumb this song down to make it congregational. And I think the best worship writers don't tend to do that. They tend to write right from the start as, I know I'm writing for my community. And it's been one of the most consistent encouragements that I've had for worship leaders is don't ever write a song for the global church.
Yeah. No,
it's about nothing. Write a song for the person in the pew next to you, or write a song for, what would you write to your kids? What do you need? What would you want to convey of God and to your kids or your friend or your community? Write with them in mind, write with a lens of how would my family view this, or how would my friend see this? How would Dorothy who always sits in that seat of it, how would she view this song? So as a lens, I think that's quite helpful. If you write the completely general, you're writing for no one. And those 10 songs tend to be, I guess, not incarnated in a way that some of these songs that are birthed. And I'm not saying that you have to kind of write only about matter and about us. We can write about, absolutely write about God, but it's what has happened, what has been birthed in this community. Mm. Maybe there was a story of someone coming to the Lord, or a baptism, or there's something happens in a community where we have, as a community, have journeyed through this difficult time together, perhaps, and we've come out the other side of it. But something that is birthed in something incarnated. Mm. Because if it was good enough for God to do that route, then I think it's good enough for his church.
Mm. I mean, you know, I love this stuff that you're talking about. And the more people I meet call it the industry, the more people I find saying the same kind of things. And it kind of strikes me, you know, you've been kind enough to invite me along to one or two things, and just seeing different people writing together, people from different contexts and so on. But I get the feeling that people are getting tired of the silos, and people are getting a little bit bored of the generic, and people are kind of thinking, where are my friends that I used to know in this thing? Because I'm not singing any of her songs and all these kinds of things. I get a sense that certainly in the UK, and I can't speak, you know, that's my context, that's our context, there is a bit of a move of people wanting to have, you know, in between songwriters and musicians and people involved in the industry, of wanting to work more closely together, wanting to hear what each other are writing and singing and so on. I just, it's putting you on the spot because it's really hard to say, but what's your feeling of where things are at and where they're moving towards in the UK scene?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. That like we say, we're not our function, you know. I am a songwriter. We're all humans first, and I think that sense of connection and of being church is so important. But then when you do offer something creatively, as a songwriter, you want it to, I don't think feedback from everybody is always a good good thing. Feedback is an absolutely vital part of the process. So wanting to get together with others, other people that you're walking side by side with, I think is so important. And I guess the other aspect of this, which I think is so key, is people want to be collaborators, not competitors. Mm. So just to name something that that I think that is a struggle for certain people is, oh, you know, that person's got this many streams, or they've got their song on a record, or their voice is brilliant, and there's all of that stuff comes up. And I think we can either pretend that that doesn't exist, or we can bring it up. We can confess it to each other. We can bring it to Jesus, and we can say, look, this is my ego. My ego exists, and all I can do is give it to you and say, I surrender this. So I think songwriters have egos because they're people. not in any particular a bigger way than anyone else. They're people. I have an ego, and I think all we can do is bring it to Jesus. When we gather, when we collaborate, we start to belong to something bigger than ourselves. And I think that competition kills. No, collaboration kills competition.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think is one of Les says it. I don't know if that's a Les original, but I love that quote that he's often saying, because we are a body together, and I love competition when it's like creative competition, like the Beach Boys and the Beatles. Like,
yeah.
Oh wow, that was amazing. We love that. That's inspired me to do something else, but. In the sense of being resentful or pulling other people down, I think there's no space for that. And I guess I just as a reflection, the people that I'm working with, I really feel are nowhere near that. And there's a genuine sense of wanting to support, encourage, partner. So I'm so happy about that sense.
Mm. Yeah. Well, Steve, listen, thanks so much for coming on the pod, for telling us a bit about you, what's in your heart, what's in your head, what goes on in the work that you're doing. And you know, thank you for what you're doing, because you are blessing people in this little world that we work in. But thanks for your time today.
Absolute pleasure to be here. Thanks, Joel.